the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 106 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Secret Diary by Cassie Alexander. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. Well, I have an exciting announcement that the story that I did last year, titled Night Waking by Benjamin Rosenbaum, has been selected as a finalist in the Parsec Awards. So no idea if I'll win that Parsec. Honestly, I just enjoy being in competition every year there and knowing that I made it to be a finalist. But that's exciting. I hope it gets the credit it deserves. It's a great little story. I enjoyed producing it with my daughter and my wife. And so hopefully, fingers crossed, it might do well at the Parsec. It's already done well, so it doesn't really matter. That would just be the icing on the cake. But if not, there's plenty of other good stories in that contest. So no worries either way. So when I ran that story last year, it was for a purpose. And that purpose was to promote the Kickstarter for the Flytrap magazine that was being revived again by Heather Shaw and Tim Pratt. And gratefully, that was accomplished. They made their funding goal and were able to do their magazine. Issue 11 of Flytrap magazine came out in last fall. I did back that Kickstarter and I got a copy of the magazine, and there was a lot of good stories in there that I've enjoyed reading. And with their success and their enjoyment of putting that magazine together, they're doing it again. Heather and Tim just kicked off another Kickstarter for issue 12 of Flytrap magazine. And so they're once again looking to be able to fund that through Kickstarter. And so once again, I'm backing it. And I'm back here again on my podcast encouraging you to back it. And in order to help with that process, I've gained permission and graciously been able to produce another story. This story by Cassie Alexander ran in issue 11 last year on Flytrap magazine. And I'm so grateful to be able to share that with you today. It's a really great story. I'm grateful that Heather and Tim and Cassie were gracious enough to give me permission to run this story as a promotion for the Kickstarter. This might become a yearly event. I like tradition, and I like supporting the things that I enjoy, and Flytrap magazine is one of those things. And so, I guess, not to delay any further, let's go ahead and run the story. The narrator for today's story is the venerable Rish Outfield of the Doonsteef Audio Fiction magazine. Cassie Alexander is an author, obviously, and she's also a registered nurse. So she's very busy in her life. But she is the author of the Eddie Spence Urban Fantasy series. That began with Night Shifted and has continued with Moon Shifted, Shape Shifted, Dead Shifted, and Blood Shifted. Her books are available here in the U.S., of course, but they're also available in Germany and the Republic of Czech and France. Cassie likes alchemy, blood, and science in that order, and is your general all-around nerd, with an emphasis on medical oddities and horror films. So there's lots of stuff that you can check out from her work. But right now, why don't you come with me and let's journey into the perilous life of a young boy.
The Secret Diary by Cassie Alexander. I only began to view it as an attack when I'd gained the wisdom of retrospection. At the time, it seemed some odd occurrence that was not personally meant for me. I was so young, I hardly knew the difference between myself and my mother. The thought of someone else wanting to harm me was so unbelievable that I chose simply not to, until future events made the realization inevitable. I wouldn't remember it at all if he hadn't worn orange. If it had been otherwise, the images might have faded in my mind, lost in the muddy stream of a boy's memory. We were shopping together, my mother and I was walking as children do, sometimes darting ahead, sometimes falling behind. My mother was haggling over the price of a wheel of cheese, and I was investigating an unlucky field mouse that I had cornered near the edge of the street. While being sure to stay out of the gutter myself, I poked around the mouse with a stick. I didn't want to hurt it, but I remember thinking it was fun to see it run, to watch its sides flutter as it panted in nervous fear. That was when he lunged out. A hand grasped for the collar of my shirt and swung me up like a farmer swings an axe. He laughed like he'd guessed the answer of a madman's riddle, and he hoisted me out into the street. I knew how the mouse felt. Then a cart I had not heard nor seen prior arrived. Not at great speed, but of wide axle, and some protuberance from the wheels caught the man who held me at the knees. He stumbled and fell, we both did, into the gutter. Only as he fell, he hit his head on a nearby stone, and the dark blood inside of him spilled out. On the back of his orange shirt, I could make out five letters spelled in blue, CRON. They were no more than mere symbols to me at the time. I was never a good student, yet their image has stayed with me ever since. I stood over him as he sputtered in dying disbelief, as the wagon rattled on. My mother called in the distance for me to attend her, having seen neither the man nor the cart, and I, not understanding fully what had happened, raced to her side. My mother yelled at me for getting my clothes dirty. I never told her about the man with his strange clothing and his even stranger attack. I was only 5. My mother never talked about my older siblings, although they died 2-1. I could read their loss in her, though, in the way she moved more slowly during their birthing seasons, her sorrow circling overhead like a chained bird, having neither a home to fly away to, nor a safe place to land. She would stare out of windows toward lost places with small graves. Her eyes were most beautiful then, dark and deep, swimming with tears she couldn't quite set free. The year I turned 11, I was attacked 3 times. I have come to realize that there may have been more attacks, ones that I never realized as such at the time, but those were the 3 that defined me. In spring, I crossed the field at dusk. I already felt foolish. I should have been home ages before, but the wanderlust that follows young children like a puppy was doubly affectionate towards me. I would be lucky to make it home before full night. I would have to pick the end of my path by starlight. So when the woman arrived, you understand, she was hard to see. I am ashamed to say that I stood there, mouth agape in the decreasing light. There was no reason for her to come straight for me. She was neither a teacher of mine nor a friend of my mother's, or, I was sure, anyone I had ever known. Yet she crossed with sure purpose, building up speed, and as she neared me, she began to run. I remember watching her for the time of 3 ragged breaths. I thought to scream, but swallowed it. Her clothing fit her in a way I had not seen before, and the sight of a woman racing toward me full tilt. Perhaps I should have been afraid, but I was struck by a wonderment instead. Was she an angel, sent by God with a message of infinite importance, come to whisper in my ear? This was a possible thing. I had spent my life longing for something strange and special to happen to me, for a sign meant for me alone. I know now it is in the nature of children to each hope to be more precious than their generic circumstance, to prove themselves always worthy in particular of their parents' love. But some children want more than that. They want not only the love of their mother and father, but the adoration of the milkman, or the cobbler, or the blacksmith up their street. They want the whole world to watch and love them and find what they do right. And I have learned that I am one of these, that more avaricious type. So it made sense to me that she was running towards me, because I deserved to be ran to. My imperceptible greatness and her unexplainable strangeness, we were bound to meet, had been meant for each other, for all time. I had only seconds to think on all of this, the 3 ragged breaths, as I said. Then, as the last light of day pulled away from the world like a sheep, leaving only muted greys behind, she held up an axe. It should have been too late for me. My wonderment, frankly, my hope, had cost me too much time. Not even the rush of speed that comes from abject fear could have saved me. But a dog tore through the waist-high weeds at the side of my path. There was just enough light for me to see its beard of rabid slaver before it leapt fearlessly towards her. Its teeth snapped down on her pant-legged thigh, and the power of its leap pulled her down. The axe dropped, flew end over end, sailing past to land behind me with a thump. She screamed, not at the dog nor at the pain it caused her, I felt, but in anger at having her purpose thwarted. And that purpose, it slowly dawned as I watched the rabid monster savage her leg, was killing me. I suppose I could have tried to help her, to run the dog off somehow. I remember thinking about it, looking around, trying to find a stick to gesture angrily with, or a rock to throw. But by the time I had decided to help, if only to find out what secrets she had, it was too late. The dog had changed its grip and had her by the throat. There was no way for her to answer me now. He'd bitten her neck clean through, and had retreated to crouch beside her as if chewing on her windpipe was to be his greatest joy in life. I cannot explain why, but I was not afraid of the dog. Instead, I crouched out in front of the woman, her life very busily leaking out from her wounds at neck and thigh, and tried to gather my courage to touch her, just once, to prove that she was there. Sometimes my mind was against me. Are not all men's minds occasionally against them, even cruelly so, trapping them inside dark dreams at night? And who was I to say that this wasn't a dream now, she and I and the gnawing dog at nightfall? I reached out with one hand to touch the end of her shoe. It wiggled under pressure, as a shoe ought, but then it... There were no words for how it changed, and I could not suppose where it was she went. Did the night take her? Was she consumed by the air, the earth, the dog? I had my hand upon the shoe, and it gave, as my own shoe might. And then there was nothing there any more, no woman, no axe. Just a rabid dog left behind, and one confused boy. I stood carefully, so as not to attract the dog's attention. My mind full of whirling questions. I went home. The second attack when I was 11 was more subtle. It was in the summer, and I was running on an errand for my mother, sent to get some bread from up the block. The money she'd given me to pay for it was hot inside my hand. I had dreams of haggling the baker down and keeping the small change, secreting it away to buy paints for myself later. I didn't know the sound of a rifle then. I had never seen one before, so the booming noises that came up a nearby wall seemed like they were the call of some strange bird, one that somehow left puffs of plaster and brick erupting in its wake. It was the screams of others that alerted me. High-pitched woman's panic, low-registered male shouting, curses mixed with prayers as people ducked and ran. The booming sounds didn't stop. And I could tell by the nearness of both sounds and chalky puffs as bullets hit mortar that they were meant for me. One came so close I could feel the wind as it grazed me, the thunder crack of it landing behind, and in fear, I involuntarily peed. There was a shout of surprise, a word of protest, and then one final scream as the man who was shooting down at me was pushed off his roof. He fell down like a dropped doll and landed, neck pointing wrong, the white bone of a kneecap sticking out. I didn't wait to see what became of him, or finish my shopping. Instead, I raced home to change my wet clothing before my father found out. I was told that my brother Edmund fell from measles. I no longer believe that is the truth. Nor do I honestly know what happened to my older siblings, who all died before their time. It is a heavy weight to know that you are the only one that can carry on your line. The third strike was in the fall. My father had sent me to the Realschule, thinking it would make a man out of me. Little did he know the trials I had already overcome. I was walking home from school, alone, avoiding others as it seemed they avoided me, waiting for another blow to land. By then I viewed everyone I met with a mixture of envy and distrust. I was angry at other people's ignorance, that they did not have to live as I lived, a black rabbit perpetually racing across endlessly snowy fields, always waiting for a hawk. And I distrusted anyone whose life was simpler than mine, as it seemed that everyone else's must. Wrapped up in my own sorrow for myself and my low position in the world, I did not see him coming. He might have easily killed me, except for his misstep on a fallen branch. Hearing dry wood crack, I whirled around, and he blinked in surprise to see his prey so clearly. "What is it that you want?" I asked him. He did not respond. "Why do you keep doing this to me?" And suddenly, the racing rabbit inside of me found rest. "Do it then! I can't keep waiting for you! I can't keep running away!" I shouted. I don't know whether he understood me. He was dressed as strangely as the others, and he had held up something that looked like, but was not entirely, a rifle. "I can't keep dodging a blow that never comes!" The weapon in his hand wavered, and I ran, not away from him as I ought to have, but nearer, so that we could finally fight. You may not know this, but a young boy is capable of quite a lot of anger. I've often thought that if the frustrations of young boys could be harnessed, they could blot out the sun, turn the brightest day into night. I ran into his chest before he fired. He was taller than me, and his gun made a sound like someone inhaling after getting punched in the gut. Or perhaps that was just me. As his fist landed, cracking two of my lower left ribs, the fire of pain lit and spread, finding my body's kindling just as dry as the surrounding autumn hills. I felt like my entire life I had nursed one dark secret, like a piece of charcoal, only knowing it was within me by its heat. This man's punch had cracked it open, revealing the red-hot flame inside, and once released, it must consume me utterly. The rest of the fight went by in a blur. I wrestled with him, like Jacob with the angel. I bit him. I found a soft spot of one eye. I landed blows into his bowels and groin, all the while he screamed words I didn't comprehend. He broke my arm and cracked my skull with the butt of his strange weapon. I went down at this, and my concussion made his words separate and echo in my head, so that his voice asked questions and then answered itself in his undecipherable tongue. He stood over me, looking down, and I asked the only question I knew how. "Why?" I asked it over and over again. "Why? Why? Why?" He brought the weapon towards me, sighting it with his undamaged eye. And then, A bolt of lightning snapped down. It struck the crown of his head and transfixed him. His hand spasmed, but the weapon yanked to one side, wasting whatever munitions he meant for me on the ground. I could hear the crackling and smell the sizzle as electricity cooked him to the bone. Drops of fat coalesced and fell, landing like spilled candle wax at my feet. I carefully pulled myself away from him, broken arm and all, and watched him die, the physical manifestation of my secret desires. The fire that had been inside of me was now eating him alive. "Why?" I asked him one last time, though there was no way he could answer. The sky above us both was empty of clouds. The truth died with him in the fire. It died with all of them, and all the ones that came after. I know, because I asked every single one. I became bold, reckless, honestly. I threw caution to the wind. The wind carried it far away, and would never bring it back. It took many more years for me to formulate a plan, based on only the evidence of their trying, and of their continued deaths. I know this will sound insane, but diary, it is your job to hear me out. I believe these men and women must be drawn to me from some other point in time. It explains their mannerisms, their weapons, their clothing. Were it only one or two of them, I could think that they travel towards me as a curious fish visits a sinking stone. But over the course of my life, and given the volume given of theirs, I have come to realize I must possess some incredible... I do not know any other word to call it. Gravity. What else can explain how many are willing to try to kill me? Who then, themselves, go on to die as I am saved again and again by the sheltering hand of fate? I have, as I must, come to consider them sacrifices to me personally. These tributes from another time. No normal man could possess so many fervent enemies. Thus, I am not normal, and freed from the shackles of normalcy, I will rise. As much as these men and women tormented my childhood, plucking the slender reed of my innocence from the riverbank of a child's idyllic life, I cannot help but be grateful to them. Without their deaths, I might have never realized deeper truths. How many men have had greatness elude them because they did not realize it was within their grasp? It will not be so for me. My father sent me away to school hoping that I would become more rigorous in my studies and leave my art behind. Instead, soon I will leave behind both schooling and art, because all I need to know these strangers from another time have already taught me. It is a conclusion so simple as to be inescapable, once thought. I am destined for greatness, and I cannot be stopped.
So there you have it. That's The Secret Diary by Cassie Alexander. Really interesting story. Really enjoyed reading this story. And I have to admit, I'm a little slow. So the first time I read this story, I just read it as a straight story. Maybe some kind of a fantasy story. By the end, you know, probably a little bit of a science fiction story. And I was just intrigued by this young boy, and why were these people trying to kill him, and how would he deal with these things? And I just read through the story. I thought, well, that's a good story. You know, this boy has a destiny, and you know, he may be the chosen one or something like that. You know, I was thinking along those lines. So I thought, oh, I'd like to run this story on the podcast. And so I, you know, started asking for permission and doing all that kind of thing. And as I read the story again out loud, thinking that, you know, I'm going to narrate the story. And so I wanted to do a practice run of it. So I read it out loud. And as I read it out loud, I started getting the clues, right? I started saying, now why did she use the term real Shula for school? You know, obvious, there's nothing else that really pinned this down to a location, but that's a German word, so this is in Germany. Okay, well, let me think about that. You know, so I was thinking about the story, and I thought about, okay, he liked art and Germany and people trying to kill him, and oh my goodness, I got the big light bulb aha moment where I realized who this story was about, who this boy was, you know, and I just really enjoyed that. I like being surprised like that, even though, you know, I might feel a little stupid when I realize, oh, duh, that's what she's trying to say. I really enjoyed that. And hopefully you did too. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to the story again. I think, you know, probably a big giveaway was Rish's delivery. You know, of course, I asked Rish to do this because there's no way that I can do I don't have a good German accent to begin with. I could probably get by with a German accent for a few lines, but there's no way that I could read this whole story and sound good in a German accent. And so I turned to Rish, and Rish wasn't quite sure what to do with it either. We talked about keeping it subtle so that it wasn't obvious who the author was. And so he tried to just go for a generic East European accent. Both of us were a little bit unsure if that worked for the story, but I listened to it again with trying to have fresh ears. And ultimately, I really like the way it turned out, especially toward the end where he starts to build in his fervor and everything. And I think it turned out well, that Rish did a really good job. Definitely better than I could have done. Like say, I did read it out loud, and I actually recorded myself reading this story before I realized I would have to use an accent and that I wouldn't be able to do that. And since I went through the trouble of recording that, I might go ahead and throw that on my Strewn Along the Path podcast, since it's kind of a cutting room floor type of thing. But again, I think the credit for this story goes to Rish. And, you know, once again, Rish delivered and gave a great narration, really made this story work. He always does. You know, I really appreciate Rish's willingness to help me out in many, many things. You know, it seems I can't turn around where I'm not asking Rish for some help with something. And he's always gracious and glad to do it. at least that's what I hear. You know, he may be grumbling at me in the background saying, geez, can't you leave me alone? But I really am grateful for Rish for doing this for me. It gave the story what it needed. But I guess spoilers, if you haven't gone back and listened to the story, if you didn't get it the first time, which you probably did. But, you know, I asked him in the email, will you be my Adolf Hitler? This kind of made me remember the story I ran way back. I can't remember what number it was. It may have been 19, Journey 19. I know I could go look it up, but come on. but the story, the David Barr Kirtley story called The Trial of Thomas Jefferson. And at the very beginning of that story, these historians break in to Hitler's bunker and abduct him before he's able to commit suicide. And they take him back and, you know, try him for his crimes against humanity. And that thought process and that whole mentality of going back in time and trying people for their past crimes continued to escalate and evolve. And it was a really, really good story and really well done. But it also played with that idea of going back in time to kill Hitler. And I love time travel stories to begin with. And when it's this creative and this when an author has the ability and the guts, I guess, to take on a cliche like this and just turning it on its head and treating it totally different and giving it this new freshness to it. Just really, really impressed me. I really got a kick out of this story. And hopefully you did too. And hopefully you liked it well enough that you're willing to go to the link that I'm going to provide in the show notes to the Flytrap Magazine Kickstarter for issue number 12. And again, I just encourage you to do that. I've backed it, and I encourage you to do that as well. I'm definitely going to check out more of Cassie Alexander's work. It sounds pretty good. And, you know, based on this story, I'm intrigued. So hats off to Cassie. Journey on, Cassie. Journey on, Tim. Journey on, Heather. I wish you all the luck in the world. Speaking of Kickstarters, I guess I'm progressing. I hope to be very soon kicking off my Kickstarter for Ken Scholes writing an Edgar Allan Poe story and funding a project to commission that from Ken. Again, I'm grateful to him for agreeing to write that story for me if it's funded. I'm just about ready. I'm putting the finishing touches on everything and getting it ready to start up. I really want to finish up the production on Of Metal Men and Scarlet Thread and Dancing with the Sunrise. And I'm going to get that to you as soon as I can. I'm not going to wait another month. Just as soon as I can get that in the can, I'm going to get that to you. So look forward to that. So that's the only real news for the podcast right now. I have some other things in the works, but just continuing on with stuff for the podcast. If you'd like to get a hold of us and give us feedback on the basic show or this story or anything else, you can definitely catch us on the forums, journeyinto.freeforums.org. You can also write us an email at journeyintopodcast.gmail.com or at gmail.com, right? You can get a hold of me on Facebook under Journey Into, at Twitter at Journey Into. You can go to the blog site, which is journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. And there are donation options there if you'd like to donate to the podcast. I think that's all I have. I hope you are enjoying the end of your summer and looking forward or not to starting a new school year. If you are going to school yourself or you have kids that are going to school or whatever, it's kind of an exciting time of year for that. I'm grateful for you listening to this podcast. I'd love to hear from you and hear your opinions and thoughts and just know that you're listening. So feel free to do that. And until next time, kids, stay safe out there and journey on.
Hey folks, this is Rish Outfield of the former Doonstief Audio Fiction magazine. You know, when I lost my partner, Big Anklevich, to a randy yeti on a bicycling tour of the Himalayas, I thought my love for podcasting had died spread eagle and screaming too. But then I discovered that the Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And it really opened my eyes. You see, that license means that you can share the files with anyone, in any way you see fit, just as long as you don't change them or attempt to sell them. What's more, the awesome theme music for Journey Into was provided by Man in Space. There, I feel better already.